Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm joined this morning by Will Love, who is going to be sitting in a number of Fridays this summer. And it's always nice to have you here in the studio, Will.
Yeah, my my annual get on the radio. It's happening. So
yeah, here we are. We're not joined by Chris Bessler, who's on his way, I believe, to Hoop Fest. He's going to be participating in that basketball tournament down in Spokane this weekend.
The world's largest 3-on-3 basketball tournament.
Still holds that title?
I believe so. Okay. I believe so, yeah.
Now, you, Will Love, for those not aware, you are also the head coach of the Sandpoint Bulldogs boys basketball team. Do you, what's your relationship to Hoop Fest, if any? If this is just not news, but I'm just curious.
I've actually never participated. Okay. One of the things that we typically do is try to keep this weekend free for the kids.
Ah.
But I made a mistake, and I scheduled something for our kids this weekend. So we'll be heading to Washington State University for a team camp there. And so I think there might be a couple of boys that are disappointed. Maybe their runs in Hoop Fest have ended. So I apologize for that. But So anyway, it's obviously, as a basketball coach, it's awesome to have that. It's so close that we've got that. And so, in fact, I had a bunch of little kids at our youth camp on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And so we did a lot of 2-on-2, 3-on-3 in the hopes of prepping those kids that are participating in Hoop Fest for the weekend and getting those big wins. So,
It must be interesting to live so close to Spokane, to be kind of in that the impact area of this, of the largest 3-on-3 tournament in the world.
Well, in you know, the Spokane area is kind of giving itself the unofficial name of Hoop Town or Hoop City USA or something like that, which you know, I think is accurate. And so when we start to look at the success that we had on the girls' side, and you know, also the turnout we're starting to have on the boys' side, you know, a lot of that can be, you know, directed towards Hoop Fest. Also, obviously, Gonzaga basketball programs, both the men's and women's, and the success that they've been having. And so you can kind of see that that's been trickling down in regard to the quality of play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Well, Hoop City, USA. Yeah, I guess that's what they're going for.
It's unofficial title, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
the czar of sports in the United States has not officially handed them that title, but I think it's also near nature, near perfect, right? Spokane and right. Something like that, or yeah,
right. Yeah, a lot of it's the Lilac City,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah,
there's
yeah.
A lot. Yeah,
a lot of marketing for Spokane, which
indeed. Yeah. Okay. Well, enough said about the city of Spokane, I guess. But it is Hoop Fest going on right now.
Jack, I've got a question for you.
Ask away.
All right. So Renaissance Fair.
That's coming up.
This weekend, right?
Right.
And so I'm just asking, so our listeners can visualize this, like, how are you going to the Renaissance Fair? I mean, what's your dress up?
You assume. No, unfortunately, I don't think we're attending the Renaissance Fair this year. I would love to, but I don't think we're going to make it. Are you going to go?
Well, I'm going to be in Washington.
Oh, right.
Pullman.
There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
You
so it is actually something I'd love to go to sometime.
Me too.
I've talked to people that have gone, they do a great job there. Just looking at the jousting on the front page of the Reader and going through the events that they have and the people that they have there, there's some pretty cool things that would be kind of fun. But if you were to live back in the Dark Ages, I mean, what would you be, like a knight or what?
Yeah, I'd be a knight. Well, I mean, I would
or a king or
yeah,
a peasant. Bring out your dead. Yeah, yeah, things
it
like that.
It doesn't actually look that fun to me to do the jousting. that looks a little painful.
Yeah.
No, I'd probably rather be sitting on the side, you know, eating a turkey leg,
okay.
watching the events. So I guess that makes me
here.
I'm a king or a courtier of some kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would, and if I did go, of course, yes, I would have to go in costume.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I think I would go as like Bill or Ted, because that's always like some of my favorite parts of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is when they go back and to the castle and stuff like that. So
yeah. That is an event going on this weekend at the fairgrounds. I made an error yesterday. When I announced that the Support the Arts Party was going to take place for the Pondere Arts Council tonight. Now, it was brought to my attention, and I'm trying to confirm this, that they actually had an announcement, I think, in last week's Reader that the Support the Arts Party had been postponed, presumably because of a little local news item that we can get to later, but the emergency out on North Boyer, where you can't actually get to the, or of course you can get to it, but you have to go the long way around to the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center to get to the venue for that event, because North Boyer Road is still closed due to that culvert failure. I've only seen one, one kind of ad where they've said that it's been postponed. I think it was in the B, but I believe that event is postponed. So you can scratch that off your calendars. That was an event planned for tonight. It will take place sometime in the future. And I regret announcing yesterday that it was going to happen tonight. Let's get to why we're here. We're talking about the news. I have a list of headlines. We usually start at the largest possible geographic area and move down to the issues of local importance. In the United States Senate, oftentimes we don't talk about.
No, we're starting
what's
really
going
big
on there. Really big.
Yep.
But this has an impact here in North Idaho, so I thought I'd talk about it. And it's covered at length in the Reader that is on newsstands right now. A couple of pieces on how this story is developing, as well as in the Daily Bee. U.S. Senator Mike Lee of Utah. Mike Lee's proposal for sale of nearly 2 million acres of public land was found to violate Senate rules, but Lee still seeks to include sale of some public lands in the tax and spending cut package that is currently working its way through the Senate. He's scaled back that proposal, but I believe he intends to still introduce a sale of 1.2 million acres nationwide. This is something that's going to have to be ruled on by the Senate parliamentarian, and I've been trying to educate myself a little bit on the, kind of the arcane rules of the Senate, how this is going to work its way through, and what the how things are likely to unfold, and I'm not totally sure anybody knows, but I do know.
Except for the parliamentarian.
Yes, the parliamentarian.
Yeah,
the parliamentarian knows all. The Idaho senators, our senators here in the state of Idaho, Mike Crapo and Jim Risch, have both said that they do not support Lee's proposal. They are both Republicans, of course, as is Senator Mike Lee of Utah. Also, Republican Senators Steve Daines and Tim Sheehy. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Sheehy, yes.
Sheehy, yeah. Of Montana, have announced that they do not support Lee's proposal either.
As well as Mike Simpson.
Mike Simpson has said he is also opposed to the sale of public lands, and Simpson is co-sponsoring what is called the Public Lands in Public Hands Act. Now, that's over in the House, not in the Senate. Co-sponsoring it with Ryan Zinke, also a Republican of Montana. The last or the other member of Idaho's congressional delegation is Representative Russ Fulcher. He has not, at least as of press time for our local papers, has not commented explicitly on the matter, but he did in an interview with the Sandpoint Reader from back in, I think it was May or April. He was not as, certainly not as explicit in his kind of opposition to the sale of public lands. And
but ultimately comments were kind of opposed.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, yes. I think we would characterize them as kind of mixed.
Yeah.
Didn't come out and say he was in favor of it.
What if we said it was
very room for
very politicky, right?
It was very politicky. Yeah. He left quite a bit of room for interpretation, I think, in his comments of whether he's going to support it or not. I'll read the exact quote here from the Reader. These are the words of Representative Russ Fulcher. As he responded when the issue of privatizing public land came up, he replied, "I do believe that we've got to figure out how to manage it locally because the resources aren't there nationally." He continued, "The intent is not to try to privatize. The intent is to try to manage it. The intent is trying to take care of it." He added, but he indicated that while he wasn't familiar with the details of the Public Lands in Public Hands Act, it, quote, "sounds to me like that's a great way to lock stuff up so that you're in the same system we're in," unquote. I believe he basically, if I can summarize this accurately, his stance was that privatization is almost inevitable of the public lands, and so he wants to be working with the privatizers, I guess, to make it happen in a way that, as you know, to make it happen in the way that he wants it to happen, or that, to put it more charitably to him, you know, in the way that best suits his constituents.
Right.
I think that's a fair way of summarizing kind of his comments in the Reader back in April. As I said, no response yet to this specific issue, which is kind of in the headlines right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you've seen any type of social media over the last couple of weeks, you've mm-hmm. seen that there are some bipartisan issues that mm-hmm. the majority of people in the United States can get behind, instead of kind of the back and forth that we're used to. And so you saw people from all ilks coming out against this proposal. You know, I think ultimately too, you know, as you said, Senator Mike Lee is scaling this back. And when we're talking about private lands now, or public lands, you know, the idea is, at least one of the big ideas was that this would allow for housing to develop and essentially bring down the costs of housing. And mm-hmm. so that was kind of the big stance from Senator Lee on that, and continuing. So I know that within the amendment that he's kind of bringing to his proposal is that it's, you know, within a certain amount of space from, you know, cities and stuff like that. Whereas the, you know, out in the, out in the wild, right, that would not be, those sales would be kind of taken off the board.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's closer to what residential centers, I guess,
yes.
is the land that he has his eyes on in his latest proposal. There's a little more news from the U.S. Senate. This comes from the Idaho Capital Sun. The Senate unanimously passed a bill to reauthorize the Secure Rural Schools and Self-Determination Program. This is a program that has, since I think 2000, provided billions of dollars to schools, roads, and other services in rural Oregon and Idaho specifically. The bill was originally crafted in the year 2000 to offset the loss of timber revenue in rural counties, but the program expired at the end of 2023. The proposal was passed, as I said, unanimously by the U.S. Senate. The Secure Rural Schools Reauthorization Act of 2025. It does reauthorize the funding of more than 4,000 school districts in 700 counties across the country. Through the 2026 fiscal year, the lead sponsors are Democrats, Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, both of Oregon, and Republicans, Jim Risch and Mike Crapo, both of Idaho. This passed the Senate, I believe, last year as well, but didn't make it to the House before the end of their session. But now they're giving it another shot. And yes, it passed unanimously. Now goes to the House for more. Speaking of school funding, Governor Brad Little has instructed state agency directors to make internal plans for budget holdbacks due to mid-year cuts in spending, and has placed limits on budget requests for the 2026 budget. This comes from Idaho Ed News, and that will affect the Education Department as well. I don't know if there's any, if you have any comment on that. You are also an educator, so you might have more insight into that than I do. I'm not sure. Well, that's pretty much the headline.
You know, I think one of the things is that we've, you know, kind of seen some more spending when it comes to public education, although there's also been cutbacks as well. So, you know, it will be kind of interesting. And, you know, I guess this projects into the future as well, it seems, because according to Idaho Ed News, the directives came as a result of the revenue, state revenue is lagging behind projections. And then also the major tax cuts that are taking effect that were passed in Idaho last year. So the combination of those two things, the projections just show that there's going to be less money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously, you know, Brad Little is warning people and also saying, you know, don't ask for stuff.
Yeah. don't ask for stuff. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Here's a little both national and state news. Idaho now, the state law that bans children from receiving gender affirming care had been blocked by an injunction, it had briefly applied to all children in Idaho, the injunction. The U.S. Supreme Court narrowed that in April 24 to apply only to the minors who actually sued over the law. The lawsuit was now dismissed on June 18th, which ends the all judicial blocks to the law, which fully allows the state of Idaho to enforce the law. It was dismissed because those transgender minors moved out of the state and therefore lost standing to sue. So it is now that state law is now in full effect to ban children from receiving gender affirming care. That's a headline here in the Idaho Capital Sun. We already mentioned the governor's holdbacks instruction. The Lakes Commission, which applies to us up here quite a bit, has provided an update on the very dry conditions in the Idaho Panhandle. It is hotter and drier than normal is the forecast for the month of June, and that has certainly been the case for these first 27 days of the month, as well as July and August. That forecast continues, of course, raising significant issues with droughts that are already affecting, I think, the flow of the Priest River, and also, of course, could lead to some serious fire conditions here in our area. Let's see here. The next meeting of the Lakes Commission is in late October. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has issued a hiring announcement for park rangers on Lake Pendre. This is a little change from what we understood their policy to be, I think, earlier, or I believe it is a change anyway. The Corps is seeking 3 temporary rangers, minimum age requirement of 18, pay between $16.95 and $17.30 an hour. But it is, these are full-time jobs that will last at least until mid-September as rangers for the various Corps of Engineers properties on the lake. As well as they're seeking a permanent maintenance worker in its natural resource maintenance section. There you go. So Army Corps of Engineers looking to expand operations, I guess, a little bit compared to
what it sounded like a couple yeah. months ago.
Yep. The city of Sandpoint. Turning now to local news.
When I walked in,
holy cow!
How far into that 4-hour meeting were you?
I was 2 hours into a 4-hour city of Sandpoint meeting, and I can summarize from my own. I have a summary from someone who was in attendance of, you know, what transpired. I haven't yet seen in either the Reader or the Bee any articles that provide any coverage from them on this new meeting. But it was a marathon session of the Sandpoint City Council. This was after the postponement or the cancellation of the meeting that had been scheduled for last week. That meeting, they did not have a quorum, so they could not hold the meeting. At this meeting, they did have in attendance Council President Deb Rule, as well as Justin Dick, Kyle Schreiber, and Pam Duquette. Councilman Rick Howarth was absent, as was Councilman Joel Espiro. And I will mention that Joel's mother, Rebecca Espiro, also a prominent local citizen, passed away over the weekend, so that's why Joel was absent. And that was, just a sad news for the family. Yeah, but the meeting with those four council members in attendance did proceed. And as I said, it lasted about 4 hours. The mayor delivered updates at the beginning, and I can at least summarize that. Some big news coming, I think, from the city staff. Bond language is being prepared by staff and is expected to be presented to council within weeks. This is for the wastewater treatment plant. So there will be bond language coming before council for their approval, and then that will, if approved, go to the polls.
And it sounded like we're talking
hundreds of millions of dollars, I believe, is what they're going to be asking for approval from the voters in November, if council approves that language, which, as I said, the legal department is working on at the city. Work is now officially complete on the, or at least as of today, was projected to be complete. On Friday, they were finishing up work on the Russell Center. Russell Center has been open now, I think, since last Thanksgiving, and the Traverse Playground, which also had been open for use, I think was closed the last couple of days, and that's what they were working on, I think, some surfacing at the playground. But it is now, they are calling the project officially complete for the city of Sandpoint.
Or is it?
yeah, exactly. At least the construction is complete. A $1 million grant was received for approximately $1 million was received for RV park refurbishment. They are aiming to open next summer. This is the RV park that will be adjacent to City Beach. There was a $50,000 match required by the city. I think the exact figure was $950,000 for the RV park itself, as well as something over $100,000 for the parking lot. So a total in the neighborhood of just north of $1 million. From the mayor's office, this was not actually delivered by the mayor himself, but Council President Deb Ruhl read a letter from Mayor Grimm that had been sent to the council. The mayor announced that he plans to scale back his hours, basically, or has asked that his compensation be aligned to match the hours he's currently spending on city business. Nothing was agendized on this, but there was a very brief discussion. Basically, the Councilwoman Duquette asked how that would be agendized. Advised just to talk to the legal department, and I think we can probably expect that item to come up in the future, a discussion of basically increasing the pay for the mayor. In the letter that
he's gonna work less.
I mean, he has said that the mayor's office, the pay scale is basically for it to be a part-time job, and he's been devoting significantly more time than that to the role of mayor, and it's been a busy time. I think he did say that he felt that now that some of the big changes to the administration have been put into effect, he does feel confident in the work that the department heads can do, and doesn't feel like he'll be, depriving the city necessarily if he does work less. But also said, I mean, my understanding of the letter was just basically that he's willing to work more as long as they're willing to pay him for it. Otherwise, he intends to focus more of his time on his other job, his full-time job as head of Whiskey Rock Consulting. So we'll look for a possible, at least discussion, of a raise for the office of mayor of City of Sandpoint sometime in the future, that I expect this city council will probably at least have a discussion of that and maybe move on that sometime in the near future. Let's see. There was a lengthy presentation and discussion of the developmental impact fees, changes to the developmental impact fees, and the council unanimously move to schedule a public hearing on those new developmental impact fees for July 16th after some discussion. And then talk turned to the James E. Russell Center that was kind of a centerpiece of the meeting, I believe.
And has become a hot topic.
Yeah, has become a hot topic. And the meeting went on after that. You may have to tune in next week for more news.
Part two.
It is now 8:32, and I do expect to see more coverage of this. I'll just before we go, the presentation on the James E. Russell Center first came from city employee Jason Welker, of course, but then featured remarks from Jim Russell himself, representing the Russell family. The facility is named for his father, James E. Russell, the James E. Russell Center. We've discussed before kind of the four options that the city has considered for what they might do on the about the James E. Russell Center going forward, considering that right now it's not paying for itself. The fees that they're getting from the Russell Center is not paying for itself. The Russell family, I think, their take was that it needs more time, and possibly it needs an expansion of hours. They're then they're pretty opposed to scaling back the hours of the Russell Center, which is one of the options that the city was, you know, considering, was to, you know, to make it less expensive by scaling back the hours of operation. The Russell family, you know, pretty firmly believes that the center is, it's been open for less than a year and needs more time to kind of find its footing.
But Mr. Russell also said the racket community does need to step up.
He did.
And, you know, because obviously you need the funds. You need, you know, people that are willing to pay for tournaments or fees and stuff like that to be able to make that money.
Yeah. It was a pretty lengthy discussion. I know that they did eventually vote on the Russell Sports Center, and I think basically voted more or less in alignment with the wishes for now of the Russell family. I think Councilman Schreiber was opposed, and the other three members of council voted in favor, and therefore the motion carried, because, as I said, the other two members of council were not present for this meeting. And the meeting went on, but our show cannot. It is 8:35, and you have to be on your way, I guess.
Yes,
you're heading to Pullman.
Yeah.
I know that they discussed the spot bus. They discussed the parking management plan, which was adopted to improve downtown parking, encourage turnover, and support infrastructure funding. The Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Commission, and I'm sure we'll talk at length about parking. I would say tune in next week about that.
Remember, we won't.
Oh, it's the 4th of July.
Fourth of July.
Okay, tune in in the middle of July for more parking news that has been quite a subject of discussion that we've had here on this show this year. Also, the Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Commission has selected new public art installations for their downtown Silver Box program. And city personnel policy was amended to allow flexible work schedules with safeguards for public continuity. The council has officially declared an emergency for the urgent replacement of a deteriorating culvert on North Boyer Road and has authorized emergency procurement. That's the news. All the news that's fit to print, I guess, for this this edition of North Idaho News of the Week. And we will not be here next week because it will be the 4th of July. We'll be off celebrating Independence Day, and then we'll be back the week after that. Thanks for listening to the program. Thank you, Will, for being here.
Thank you, Jeff.
Sticking around.
Yeah,
this was nice. Let's continue now with Otto's Eclectic Mix here on 88.5 KRFY.